So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Shep Hyken. Hi, Shep.
Hello, Adrian.
How are you doing?
I'm terrific today.
Fantastic. So, Shep, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a bit about you and a bit about the work that you do?
Sure. I am from St. Louis, Missouri, here in the United States, and I've been in this business for about 30 years. I am a customer service expert. I work with companies who want to build loyal relationships with their customers and their employees. Our goal is to help our clients create amazing, amazing experiences for them.
Fantastic. Now, you just written a book, which I've got with me, right next to me, called Amaze Every Customer Every Time, 52 Tools for Delivering the Most Amazing Customer Service on the Planet.
Now, I know, and I just love that you have that book.
Now, tell us a bit about it and how it came about and what's the purpose of the book.
Sure. And as I mentioned, I've been doing this for almost 30 years. This is my 10th book.
Yep.
Five have been co-authored. This one is the 10th one, the fifth one to be authored just by myself.
Okay.
Every one of them have to do with customer service.
Right.
And people always say, what else is there? You keep writing books. Well, believe it or not, I keep coming up with new ideas as I hear great things that companies are doing and people are doing and
yep.
technology changes. It was time to write something new. It had been a couple of years since my last book called The Amazement Revolution.
Right.
And I had about 15 ideas that I wanted to put into a new book.
Okay.
And I just started looking around for a particular company that I could use as a role model. And this is where it gets interesting. The last book, I had seven different strategies or concepts to discuss. And what I did is I found 50 different companies to represent different case studies for different examples of these strategies.
Well,
I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could find one company to represent all of these 15 ideas? And what happened is I found one, and then as I got into my interviews, I kept getting more and more ideas to the point where the subtitle of the book is 52 Tools for Delivering the Most Amazing Customer Service on the Planet. So
yeah.
Now there are 52 of them, not 15. And I would say that 85%, maybe even 90%. There might be five or six repeats in there, maybe approached from a different angle, but everything else is pretty much new.
Excellent. I mean, I think that's one of the fascinating things about it is that, I mean, obviously the book is a continuation of almost like a conversation or a narrative that you've been having over the last sort of 30 years. and it's, you have to, you're going to have to create an anthology set at some point. You know,
hey, if you want it, I'll put them all in a box and send them to you.
So before we dive into the tools, I mean, because there are 52 of them, and it's, I mean, it is a toolbox, and I want to get sort of into that. The near the beginning of the book, you start with talking about the seven amazement principles that you say are essential to understand before embarking on the use of the tools. And can you tell us a little bit more about them and why you think they're essential?
Sure, and then I want to tell you why we call them tools, which I think is kind of a fun, interesting topic.
Okay.
But the seven amazement principles, this is the part of the book that just brings, if this is the first time you've been introduced to any of my work, these seven ideas are really the last, you know, everything I've been talking about for the last 25, 30 years.
Okay.
And it starts with this concept called the moment of magic. And
mm-hmm.
I struggled with this being the first one. Because really the second one was really, I think, the impetus of why I speak about what I do and why I research what I do. So I'm going to go out of order. I'm going to do number two first, and that is The Moment of Truth.
Okay.
The Moment of Truth was a book that was written in the mid-1980s. Prior to that, there was an article that came out by this guy named Jan Carlson.
Yeah, he's the SAS guy.
Right. Ran Scandinavian Airlines. And in the book, he talked about how he took over this failing airline, and he turned it around with this concept called the moment of truth. And are you familiar with it?
Yeah.
I think you are.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, it's anytime that customer, client, whatever you want to call them, comes into contact with any aspect of a business, they form an impression. And that impression can be good or bad.
Yeah.
And he rallied all of his employees together, which were all the employees of the airline. He went into every city they had a presence. Brought him into an airplane hangar, and he basically said, hey, everybody, we've got to fix this. And the way we're going to do it is manage every customer interaction or passenger interaction, and we're going to make this moment of truth, which he defined as when the passenger comes into contact with any aspect of the airline, they're going to form an impression. He says, we are going to manage that moment of truth and make it good.
Okay.
But then he added something that was really important, and that was, he said, if you are not dealing directly with the passenger, you're probably supporting somebody that does.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, manage that internal moment of truth as well. And I believe that is probably where the first, I can't find anywhere prior to that where they talked about the internal customer,
yes,
so to speak.
Yes.
So powerful, powerful concept. And basically, I have hung my entire career on this guy's concept. So and maybe I need to pay him a royalty. I'm not sure. But I've met him once at an event where we spoke at together. The cool thing is I came up with words to describe the positive moment of truth and the negative moment of truth. And I also added one that he didn't talk about, and that's one that's in the middle, which is one that's just average. And we'll get to that in a moment. So,
okay.
So the first, which is actually the number two principle in the book, is called the moment of truth. But from that, you have a positive moment of truth called the moment of magic, which,
yes,
is anything better than average.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's amazingly high, over the top, better than average. But the best companies are consistently better than average, and they're consistently stringing these moments of magic along.
Yeah.
So just a little better than average, moment of magic. Anything negative, moment of misery. That's another one of the principles. We try to avoid the moments of misery. And, you know, we talk about it later on in the tools, but there's many different ways to deal when you have some type of an issue. But ultimately, you want to get the problem resolved quickly. You want to do it with the right attitude. And of course, you know, you want to get it resolved. So those three things have to happen. Fix,
sure,
it, right attitude, urgency, and you usually fix a moment of misery and restore the confidence. Another, the one in the middle, the average moment of truth is what I refer to as a moment of mediocrity.
Yeah.
Because companies that are complacent, companies that are getting satisfactory ratings as opposed to anything higher than satisfactory, to me, that's just a mediocre performance. And ultimately, when a client or customer or guest or whatever you call them says, you know what, I want a place that treats me a little bit better, something better than just okay, they're going to go ahead and find it. The customer amazement concept, which is another one of these important principles, is when a moment of magic, as I mentioned earlier, when there's a bunch of them together,
mm-hmm,
when all of your moments of truth are just a little above average, that's what the amazing companies do. And by the way, it's not that they're flawless.
No.
It's that they are able, if there is a problem, they have a system in place, they're able to deal with it. They know how to deal with it. Their people have been trained, because nobody is perfect. No company is perfect. You can be great and perfect for a while, but eventually there's going to be a bump in the road. And it's how it's managed and how you restore that customer's confidence that's important. Principle number six is about the internal and the external customer. We touched on that when,
yeah,
Jan Carlson mentioned, you know, if you're not serving the customer, you're probably serving somebody that is. And finally, number seven, and this is kind of a big one. I wrote a whole book on this called The Cult of the Customer, and it's to understand the different phases or cults that customers and employees lie in. But I'll take you through them very, very quickly. I'll give you the 60-second version of about a 200-page book.
Okay.
So there's five of them, and the first is, and we'll take it from the customer's perspective, uncertainty. First time a customer comes to do business with you, they are hoping for a good experience, but they aren't sure how it's going to turn out until they actually do it. They may give you the benefit of the doubt, but that's uncertainty. So you're going to make a brand promise to them. Whatever your promise is, whatever you want that customer to perceive your business to be like, you're trying to get them into alignment. So that's you're getting them out of uncertainty into alignment. When they experience the brand promise, now they're in that phase or cult of experience, they're liking it. And if they know what's going to happen the next time,
mm-hmm,
because they trust it, it becomes an owned experience. So now you're in the phase of ownership.
Right.
So you've got uncertainty moving into alignment, experiencing it. And then when it's predictable, it's owned. And if it is always better than average, the word I use to describe it, we've already talked about it, is amazement. So
right,
that is when you're in that cult or zone of amazement. And the goal is predictably, all the time, a little better than average.
Fantastic. So those are almost the foundation steps to before you embark on the tool. It's almost like as you say, they're principles, the first principles before you can start embarking on the the tools, as it were.
Right. I just think it's a good foundation, and it gives the readers, you know, just be up to date. You know, in 7 or 8 pages, we nail, you know, really what the essence is. And from that, I mean, I can talk about any one of these principles and go on and on and on for them and write chapters and speak for, you know, 30, 45 minutes to an hour, give you workshop exercises, all types of content related to it. But I think it's just a good foundation to have and understand what those are.
I mean, in a way, it feels like the principles are they're mindset issues in a way. And it's almost like getting your mind and your culture and your ethos and your beliefs in the right sort of place before you get let loose with the tools, as it were.
Right. I think they're more strategic is a good way to describe it versus tactical.
Okay.
So,
and
you're right. I think the words you use, mindset, it's a perfect way. You know, when you go to hire somebody who you want to find is very customer focused, you're looking for that proper mindset. You're looking for that background where they may, you know, I love... In the last book of The Amazement Revolution, we interviewed Jim Bush, who is the executive VP of Worldwide Service for American Express.
Right.
And when they're hiring people for their call center, we talked about their hiring and how they approach it. And they said, what we're looking for is people with backgrounds, not in call centers. You think somebody who worked at a call center before that was very good, they might want, of course, if they're very good, they probably would want them, but if they found somebody that worked at a hotel or a restaurant that understands a little bit more about hospitality, that is probably of higher interest to them at this point.
Right.
They spend so much time trying to build a relationship with the customer. That is of key importance to them. If they feel that hospitality background may be better than the ability to flip through screens in a call center terminal.
Well, it's almost that basic idea that you can teach skills, but you can't teach attitude.
Right. So interestingly, what they've done is they've flipped what typically is spend more time training the skill and definitely always keep a piece of that attitude in there, that soft skill, be it customer service or whatever.
Yeah.
Most companies will, the good companies will do a chunk of that in every training. But they had a formula that was 75% technical and 25% soft skill, which is really huge.
Yeah.
And then Jim said, not enough. Let's flip it around. And they now spend 75% of their time focused on relationship building skills, customer service skills, and then 25% is the technical knowledge and the ability to flip through the screens properly.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
Pretty impressive.
Absolutely. Now, jumping into the tools, you split the tools into sort of 5 different categories across leadership, culture, one-on-one, competitive edge, and community. I mean, why did you do that, and why is each area important, do you think?
Sure. Now, before we get into that, can we talk about why we call them tools?
Yeah, of course.
I think this is real important, because if somebody picks up this book, they're going to go, what the heck? What's this about? And I think it's real important that right up front we know this, because as I mentioned, I was looking for one company to represent all of the work in this book, you know, so as a case study throughout. Granted, there are other companies mentioned. I mean, I mentioned, you know, some of the other rock star brands, but I was looking for the rock star that was more or less not so much undiscovered, but not written about as much. And I landed on one, and I'll tell you why, because in finding this company, you know, I was thinking, who do I want to write about? More about American Express, Zappos.com, Ritz-Carlton, Apple Computer. These are all the rock stars of today.
Yeah.
And one of my clients who I've been working with for years and years, let me give you a little background. They're in the retail business.
Okay.
They have a headquarters that has, it's a multi-billion dollar company, but the reality is all the retailers, and there's 4,600 locations in 70 countries, they're all owned. They're not franchised, but they're owned individually by either, you know, it could be one family or an owner owning one store. Some of them own some multiple stores, but there's 3,000 owners. I thought, wow, that's cool. It's small business and it's big business at the same time. They also, in the last 7 years, have won 7 years in a row in their industry the J.D. Power Award for customer satisfaction in their industry.
Right.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Business Week gave them a top 10 rating as they listed the top 25 customer service brands. They were ranked number 10. Now, one of my favorite companies in the world, the Ritz-Carlton, was ranked number 12.
Right.
Wow. So now you're wondering, who is this company? And the company is Ace Hardware.
Okay.
So, Ace Hardware...
And everybody in the UK goes, who?
Yeah, but actually, believe it or not, in the UK, they're just under a different name.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, 70 different countries, and primarily in North America.
Right.
But here's what's cool about this hardware store chain. They're all owned by, as I mentioned, individual owners, and they're smaller stores. I'm going to say small. They could be anywhere from 5,000, 8,000, 10,000 square feet.
Right.
And sometimes right next to them is a big box store, like a Home Depot or a Lowe's.
Yeah.
Or any of the box stores around the world. And they have figured out a way to compete against these large companies that not only are sometimes 5, 7, 8 times larger in their footprint of the store, but also they'll outspend in advertising 30-1. So how do you compete against that? And this company not just survives, they thrive sometimes literally next door in the shadow of these big box stores. And I thought, wow, that's a David and Goliath story. And everybody has competition. And it doesn't matter if they're a big box store or just somebody just like you right down the street. How do you compete against somebody like that? And
you know,
they win on customer service.
You know, that's a fantastic example. Because I just finished reading another book. I don't know if you've read it as yet. Have you ever heard of an author called Malcolm Gladwell?
Love it. You're probably talking about the new book, David and Goliath.
Yeah. Well, I was away last week for a few days and I read it and I thought there's some of the principles in there was fantastic. Some of the stories about how sometimes we see advantages that we see that people have are actually disadvantages. And also the reverse is true as well, how a disadvantage can become an advantage. And it sounds like that your Ace Hardware has got what some people would perceive as being a disadvantage, but they turn it into an advantage.
Right. What they've done is they have their mantra, their promise, what they want the customer to be aligned with is the concept that they're the most helpful stores on the planet.
Right.
So their jingle is Ace is the place, the helpful hardware place.
Right.
And helpful is their word. So they've defined helpful as more than just being nice in customer service. You can go to any place and get nice customer service, and they'll get high ratings for being nice. But
yeah,
helpful is another story. And that comes from not just the the soft skill of being nice, but the technical skill of being knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
So they spend a lot of time focusing on, first, delivering great customer service, and second, getting some technical knowledge so that when you come in and you have a project that you're working on, they're going to ask you all kinds of questions to make sure that you walk out of there with everything you need so you don't have to come back for something that you forgot. Matter of fact, I wrote an article saying, we don't want you to come back.
Right.
it wasn't that we don't want you to come back forever. We just don't want you to have to come back because you forgot something or we didn't ask you if you needed something. You buy a can of paint, it seems like, to make sense. Hey, do you have brushes at home? Want to make sure you have brushes because we don't want you getting home with paint and go, oh, I forgot the brushes.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, it sounds like they're recruiting, if you like. Their policy is about we need to recruit nice, friendly tool heads.
Right, right. And they don't even have to be tool heads to start with.
No, sure. But
turn them into that.
The propensity to be a tool head.
Yeah, it's a good thing. When there was one gentleman I interviewed, Sean Curry, up in Boston, and he had a store. His family had a store for, I don't know how many years, 30-plus years, and then a large box store moved in right next door to them. And what he did was interesting, and this is actually in the book. We call it Befriend the Competition, with the subtitle from the famous line, even though I don't think it originated in The Godfather, it's keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yeah.
What he did is he picked up the phone, he called the manager of the store, he said, hey, can I take you to lunch? I want to talk to you. And he said, look, we're next door to each other. We're going to be competing against each other. But there are things that you do that we don't do. If you would help me understand what they are, if we're not able to help our customers, we want to be able to send them to you.
Right.
And I want you to know what we do, because we do some things that are quite different than what you do. And that way your people can send customers to us. He has never been busier as a result of that conversation.
Excellent.
Yeah, and they feed business back and forth to each other because they know what they're best at and they stick to it. And instead of trying to be everything to everybody and compete and match what they're doing down the street or next door even, they choose to stay in their lane and deliver what they do best.
So sort of decide what your strengths are and stick to your strengths.
Right.
Fantastic. So going back to the categories...
Yep. So the five categories. There's leadership, and very quickly, leadership doesn't mean it's from the CEO level or the high up level. No, everybody when it comes to customer service is a leader. They are somebody that when I'm looking at that person who may have just been hired and I'm watching them interact with a customer and I go, wow, they really know what they're doing. Everybody can be emulated. And my favorite tool, I'll talk about that in just a moment, is the first one.
Okay.
But we'll get to that in a moment because I want to tell you about the other four quickly. The second piece is culture, that I believe that it isn't one person that makes a company great. It takes the entire company, and customer service has to be a part of the culture.
Yeah.
Third area is one-on-one, and these are true one-on-one type of things that you would do when a customer walks in the door or when you answer the phone or when you're dealing them, however you deal with them. What's the engagement that you have? And that's more one-on-one.
Yeah.
The fourth area is a competitive advantage. Ideas like Sean's, where he picked up the phone and called the manager of another store, that helped him get a competitive advantage just by, you know, it's just a good little tactic or technique that he used.
Yeah.
And other ideas like that. And then the fifth area, which I think is so important, is what we call community.
Uh-huh.
And that is to be involved with your community, to know your community, and really important, to give back to your community, because if you give back, it comes back. There's a law of reciprocity, and I heard Zig Ziglar growing up, a great motivational speaker, he used to say, if you help enough people get what they want, you're going to probably get what you want. And
yeah.
So far, I found that to be true.
I know that saying, and I love that saying. I think it's, yeah. I wish it was everybody's mantra. Let me say that's all I'll say on that.
Right, right. And I'm sure I didn't say it quite the way he said it, but it's close enough and we get the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Shep, can you give me there's 52 tools, and this isn't, I guess the one thing, first thing I thought before I started reading the book was that I thought, 52 tools, does that mean it's one a week, or is it just 52? And actually it's just 52 split across those five categories. But
right, and by the way, one a week is a great way to take them on. We actually created a deck of cards where each of the 52 tools is listed on each one of the cards. And
okay.
You shuffle the cards up, and you pull one out, and that's the one you work on that week. And you can do it with your team, and then you set the card aside. Next week, you've got 51 cards, shuffle them up, pull another one out. And if you don't actually have my deck of cards that we created, you can just write the numbers 1 through 52 on a deck of cards and then shuffle them up and then cut to one, and that's the one you're going to work on. It's pretty simple.
Fantastic.
And that's why I encourage people not to just read the book, but
yep.
Use the book.
Yes.
And by the way, you're going to choose a tool in this process. You're going to go, gosh, does that really apply to me? I'm not sure it does. Now, I'll tell you, as the author, I know it applies to you. You just don't see it yet.
Yep.
So what I want you to do is keep an open mind. And as you read through the idea, you know, for example, I mentioned in the leadership idea, the very first tool is act like you're the owner.
Yeah.
You know, and what that means is to take on the responsibility as if you own the place. What would the owner do? What would that decision be? And I use the example of a kid who's 18 years old who is complimented by by one of the customers saying, boy, you must be like the son of the owner. And he goes, why? Because you take so much pride in what you're doing. And why can't everybody do that? Now, that's real easy. If we just started with that one, that would be perfect. You know, picking up the deck and getting to the tool that's about befriending the competition. And how can you tell somebody that isn't an owner or manager to befriend the competition? But you know what that person can do? That employee can take the initiative and maybe on the way home, stop by the competition store. Walk inside and look around, see what they're doing, kind of get an idea of what it's about, and maybe they pick up an idea, maybe they learn something, maybe they learn how to be a little bit more competitive just by virtue of the fact that they've just walked in the store.
Absolutely.
And looked around.
I mean, I think there was one tool, I was just flicking through there, and there's one tool that I saw and you mentioned, think about the creating a last impression. Because there's what's interesting is that a lot of people talk about the importance of making a good first impression, but they don't necessarily always talk about making a good last impression. And it's interesting because I wrote something about that just on by my research. You know that there's have you ever heard of a psychological principle called the primacy and recency effect?
No, tell me about it.
Okay, so, and you'll love this because it speaks to exactly to that. So in relationships, in the way that the brain works, there's a primacy and recency effect. So if you take a relationship, the reason why we remember the beginning and end parts of a relationship more than we do other relationships is because that's when they're more emotionally intense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
And so if you imagine like a long relationship, it's going to have lots of little kind of curves in it. So it's got lots of the big primacy one at the beginning. When you meet and you start, you know, say it's your wife, you start dating, you start going out, you fall in love.
Romance.
All of that sort of stuff. And then there's all these other sort of bits that's in between where it's over the course of a day, over the course of a year, anniversaries, birthdays, births, all those sort of different things. And those become events. But then, if you like, when some relationships come naturally to an end, for whatever reason, the end of the relationship becomes very emotionally intense as well for different reasons. And those are the bits that we remember. And that's why a last impression is really important because we're more likely to remember those two bits rather than the bits in between.
Right. So you kick it off and you crescendo more or less with that last impression, which, you know, that's what makes the lasting impression. And that's the point of that tool, is to recognize that the last impression is a lasting impression.
Yeah. So is there a couple of tools out of the 52 that you think, well, rather than going through them all, is there a couple of tools that you'd like to share with us to give us some examples of that? And so give us a flavor of how you run them through in the book?
Sure. There's a great idea on dealing directly with customers, and this is one that you should instill. Every employee should be able to focus on this one, and that is one to say yes, two to say no. This is one of my favorites. Most of the time, if somebody needs to get approval for something, they say, let me go to the manager to get approval. And I hate that because it's like, why? They're going to get approval.
Yeah.
You know, I can't, because if I look at it, it's common sense to me, they're going to get approval. And why doesn't the management and the ownership and the leadership just say, hey, everybody, you're empowered to do what you think is the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you think it's wrong, come back and see us and we'll confirm that it's wrong. You need two people to say no to a customer.
Sure.
And
okay.
One of the owners of the Ace store said, by doing this principle, he eliminated 80% of the complaints and the questions that came his way based on negative issues, because the employees, or the associates as they call them, were taking care of the customer and empowered to do so. And it's really a cool thing. The other day I was in a store and I picked up an electrical part that was sealed in plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And the store has a very liberal return policy. I mean, yeah, if there's a problem, bring it back. So before I left the store, I said, hey, before I pay for this, is it okay if I open it up and check it out and make sure it's right? And this guy was brand new, and he said, you know what, I need to check and make sure that's okay. And I said, I'm going to stop you for a second. You can still check, but here's the deal. If I take it off out of the store and I open it up and I don't like it, I still get to bring it back. What's the difference? Let's make sure it works here. And he still went and talked to his manager, and the manager said, yeah, this is exactly the kind of thing you can do on your own. Brand new employee.
Yeah.
Guess what? He learned that day, and now he knows. One to say yes, two to say no.
Fantastic. Nice. And another one that you'd like to
give us an example? Sure. A great, I would say, kind of a culture piece that is to be the best place to buy from. You also need to be the best place to work, okay?
Yeah.
And that basically says what's happening on the inside of a company is being felt on the outside of the company. So really, the true customer focus starts internally with the way you treat your employees.
Oh, couldn't agree more. Hopefully that gives everybody a sort of a flavor of some of the, if you like, some of the tools. I mean, and I guess in the way I like to think about it is it is a toolbox, because not every company is necessarily going to need to go through all of them, but they can pick and mix, or they can do the random sort of card shuffling that you alluded to earlier. But it's a toolbox. It's almost like you could also do a self-diagnosis on where you think you need to improve, and then pick the tools that you think are going to help you get started on that journey.
Right, and a good manager or a leader who wants to do it that way would read through the book, choose the ones that they think are of most importance and relevant. And again, I can argue that they're all relevant, but you know, that's fine. And then take the employees or the associates or the team members, whatever they call them, through the various exercises. And the point, you know, here's the other thing that's really cool about the toolbox. And again, I love it. Ace Hardware Toolbox. Well, in the toolbox is a drill. That's one of the tools in the toolbox, right?
Okay.
So at the end of every one of these 52 tools, there is a drill. And it's one or two questions at the end that basically asks you, you know, how does this apply to you? When's the last time this happened to you? And how did you react? I mean, it's a great little conversation starter, and it allows you to have a great conversation and a little mini workshop, if you will, for each one of these tools.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine that sort of teams or departments could use this as a bit of a, it's almost like running a book club type thing.
Yep, exactly. And I've made it real easy. I've given you the questions to talk about.
That's cool, man. I think it's there's a lot of great stuff in there. I mean, so I'm just conscious of time as well. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about the book before we start to wrap up?
Well, once again, I think more than anything, and I'm very proud of this book. I love how we interviewed over 60 people of the retailers, plus the executives. I feel that it's spot on for virtually any business, and I'm just really proud and I'm honored that Ace allowed me to do this, because when we talked about it, I wasn't sure they would say yes.
Right.
So, if you go to the website, amazeeverycustomer.com, you can actually download the first part of the book, which is the whole setup that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, of the five categories that are there, we give you a tool from each one of those. So you can get a sample of the whole book. And there's no charge for that. And we don't even ask your email address. If you want it, it's yours.
Fantastic. So, Chip, there's always a couple of questions that I ask people when I interview them to wrap up the interviews. The first one is, so what's your plans for the rest of 2013 and beyond? Well, apart from world domination, obviously.
World domination. It's great that you asked that. I always have a pretty good plan. We are still so involved in the promotion and everything, doing these interviews with the book. The book just came out last month.
Uh-huh.
So it's still very, very brand new. What I want to do with this is we've started to turn it into a two-day workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, we're looking at taking the book and creating an online, virtual, interactive type of experience so that you can actually go on and go through the 52 tools, and we'll quiz you and talk to you and force you into a discussion. It's pretty cool. So those are some of the big plans with the book.
Fantastic. And finally, here's my end killer question that I always ask, and is,
all right,
what would you like to shamelessly plug, as if I didn't know already?
Well, actually, I'm going to surprise you. As much as we've been plugging the book for about the last 30 minutes here, so let me give the listeners something else to think about.
Okay.
We have an online program, a general customer service program that takes those seven principles we talked about early on, and we talk about them, and we blow it out to a full-blown interactive program that some companies, they'll buy it as a license for their entire company. And I would love if everybody would take a look at that, because the best way for us to create an amazement revolution is to get everybody involved in creating amazement.
Yeah.
So we want to educate, train, and help them to do that. So if you go to, the easiest way is to go to thecustomerfocus.com.
Okay.
T-H-E for the word the, customer, you know how to spell it.
Yeah, yeah.
Customer focus. So thecustomerfocus.com. And learn about it and have fun with it. You'll learn about our online and our on-site training, but definitely check out the online virtual training.
Perfect. Shep, we'll make sure that gets all linked up, and when we get it all kind of written up and once we publish it, we'll give the interview and you a big shout out. But just wanted to say thank you for your time today. That's been great.
Adrian, thank you. This is a great opportunity. Love talking to you. Let's do it again real soon.
Fantastic. Thank you.